This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
But Staley, if he thinks that his defense played good yesterday, he's so far out of the race, he actually thinks he's in the lead.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, we had an interesting early window in the National Football League yesterday. Had a fun Sunday Night Football game as well. We'll get into that later on in the podcast. But all eyes, at least in the witching hour, were turned to Lambeau Field, where the Green Bay Packers defeated the Los Angeles Chargers 23-20. I'm sure your guy, Big Daddy, I'm sure he was texting y'all throughout the game, disappointed. But hey,
no, no, no need to text. He was sitting in his chair to the right. He was in my living room. His eyes were fixated. It was truly. I think I could sell tickets for the goddamn event. It starts off with even before the amount of negativity that enters the house at 101 when the game starts is just remarkable. You cannot have this much negativity, but it just is remarkable. And at 101, at 5-1, he's like, no one's coming to the game. Who would want to see this crappy team play? Of course, the fields, the stadium's packed, right?
Sold out.
And then he sees LaFleur with his fresh haircut, and he's like, wonder how much he spends a week on haircuts. Like, he's mesmerized by LaFleur's haircut, you know? And then when LaFleur starts moving his arms around to get the crowd going, Big Daddy's joining in. The negativity was just unbelievable. Just even when they run a good play, it's negative. Even when they run a good play and nobody's any good and they got no skill. I mean, it's all the things. But it was truly a match of wits, this game, right? And it gave us, to start the game, we kind of had like the perfect appetizer to start the game. You know, LaFleur on 4th-and-2 goes for it. Big Daddy complained about the call. They ran fullback in the flat to the quarterback's left side, you know, and got tackled for a 1-yard loss. But not to be outdone. You know, the Chargers come right back, and they're on their 4th-and-4. They go for it, and the kid drops a pass wide-ass open over the middle of the field. But, you know, I mean, it was a day of every time I looked up, the Packers are moving the ball. And I'm like, look, Big Daddy, your offense is on track here, man. You just can't slow this team down. You know, you just can't slow this team down. And then they get a chance, you know. So then this is the best part of the whole day. So, you know, when Keenan Allen drops a couple passes, he now announces to me and everybody watching, Millie, that Keenan Allen will break their heart. Keenan Allen's going to make a play to get the touchdown. And I'm like, Big Daddy, look, you predicting that is like me predicting it's going to rain in Florida in the summertime. Like, Keenan Allen's the only guy they have on their team.
Exactly.
Like, just like, you're not Svengali predicting that. Like, you're not, you know, you're not Kreskin over here. You can't. I mean, this isn't like you're seeing the future, right? Like, that's a pretty fair bet. He's going to, well, why wouldn't we double? Why don't we draw? Why don't we take him out of the game in the second half? I mean, because it's hard to do. They motion him. They stack him. They bring him around. It's kind of hard to do. Anyway, when he scores a touchdown, I told you. And then, of course, only on a 3rd-and-20. On a 3rd-and-20 could the Chargers get a pass interference. And then give up a touchdown. And then still have two opportunities with the ball with 2:33 to go in the game to get a field goal to tie it. And guess what? They can't do it.
Yeah. Now, every time I looked up, it felt like the Chargers were either inside the red zone or in Packers territory. I mean, they had the fumbles by Austin Eckler. They just so many miscues. I mean, the end of the game where Quentin Johnston, like that drop pass, like there was a lot of killers there for the Chargers.
To me, when I'm watching the game, and I said this to Big Daddy, they wore the wrong shoes at the game. I mean, they were slipping and sliding like crazy on the field. And if you know Lambeau Field and you play there and you've played there in your career, you know that field because of the coils and because of all the stuff that goes, that field is slippery. And if you don't wear the right spikes on that field and you don't mandate that the players wear them, you're going to slip. Eckler slips on the goal line, you know, and he slipped another time. I mean, it wasn't there. And look, let's face it. I mean, they've got every opportunity to win the game. I know Keenan Allen dropped the ball in the sun, you know, all that. Johnson, he dropped a hell of a throw. You couldn't put this one on Herbert. You can't put this on Herbert. You just can't. I mean, he put the ball where it needed to be. You could sense the frustration in Herbert. You really could just watching that game. They're tired of this crap. I mean, they've lost four of the last six games, you know, and the two games they've won have been against your New York Jets and the Bears.
My New York Jets gangrene. And like when you see Justin Herbert, who like is a very mild mannered person, to put it like that's even probably like under exaggerating. Like he was like visibly upset. And that's when you know that we've probably reached a breaking point with the Los Angeles Chargers and maybe a breaking point with their head coach, Brandon Staley, who we've talked about. He gets called the defensive guru. There's no goo in the roo.
There's no roo in the guru. No matter how much he wants to freaking defend it. Like, seriously, we watch his teams play. He can't win close games. They haven't been good on defense forever since he's been there. I don't care what he says.
Well, let's listen to what he had to say, because he was pressed on it by the media. The Chargers media was asking him after the game, are you going to still be calling the defensive plays and what's going on with your defense? Here was Staley's defense.
I have full confidence, like I've told you, and like I've told you from the beginning, I have full confidence in our way of playing. Full confidence in myself as the play caller and the way that we teach and the way that we scheme. Full confidence in that. We got to bring this group together and do it consistently, okay? And that's where it's at. So you can stop asking that question. Okay, I'm going to be calling the defenses, okay? So we're clear. So you don't have to ask that again. There were a lot of other things that caused us to lose today. It certainly wasn't our defense. It was the way we played as a team. We didn't play well enough on the red zone on offense. We dropped too many passes, okay? We gave up a few killer sacks, okay? We did this as a team. Stop making it about one unit, because that's not what happened out there today. Our team lost, and I am fully responsible for it, and I take full responsibility. But we lost as a team today, and that's the storyline.
It was a complete team effort in the loss. And he said that he takes responsibility for it, and he should take responsibility for that defense that, once again, giving up yardage after yardage, and that Jordan Love had one of his best statistical performances. I'm not sure where the confidence comes from, but he's confident in what they do out there in Charger land.
At 50% on third down, the Packers, and you say you're playing good defense. Now, look, I agree with what he said at the beginning there, that it's never one thing why you lose, right? It's never that. And every time I watch a game, I always think about, okay, the game's over, and I go to my notes, and I type in, okay, what would I have to tell Al Davis why we lost the game? You know, what would it be? Did we not practice against a certain look? Did we not do this? Did we not handle a player? Did we not take a guy out of the game? All those things, right? And to me, this is a game where it's pretty clear. I think one thing that's clear is the Chargers aren't as good as we think they are. Like, they get this rep for being this talented team. But when you take Keenan Allen out of the game, who else is making plays for him? I mean, Eckler's a good player, but Eckler looks to me like he's not the same guy coming back from the injury, right? He doesn't have that same burst. He didn't look like it yesterday. So, and then tell me where they are on defense. I mean, Joey Bosa's hurt again. I think Joey Bosa's played three seasons in his NFL career of 16 games. He's always hurt, right? He's always hurt. They got Eric Kendricks in there. He looks like a guard on a midget team. I mean, he looks heavy, can't run. You know, they give up a huge play on a missed tackle. Like, tell me where everybody says they're so good. Like, tell me where they're good. When they had to throw the ball at the end of the game, Femi, when those two tackles, they had to block the Packer front, which Big Daddy says they have no players. They have no players. And so I'm going through, well, you know, this guy's a first rounder. That guy's a first rounder. You know, we got no players. We got no players out there. Okay. Well, they do. They couldn't block the Packers. They couldn't block them, you know, and they can't win. I mean, if you're this good, right, if you are this good, then why in the last 27 games have 19 of them have been so close and you can't win them? I mean, you can't win. I mean, look, let's face it. Herbert's 16-19 against the spread in toss-up games in his career. They can't get him over the hump. You know, and here's again, you know, your guy, Kellen Moore, he's got the ball with 2:33 to go. Kind of similar situation. They got three timeouts, can't get a first down. Got to punt it back, and then the Packers run three plays. Big Daddy's complaining because they ran the ball. Big Daddy, they need to get the timeouts away. No, okay, they punt it back, and now, you know, they can't even get in. Now, he makes a great throw, no catch. I think there's a misconception there. But Staley, if he thinks that his defense played good yesterday, then he really belongs to the Uncle Junior quote, which is he's so far out of the race, he actually thinks he's in the lead. Yeah. I mean, really, if he thinks his defense played well, I mean, this is the first time the Packers threw for over 300 yards all year. I mean, going into the game, the Packers, Love was the worst quarterback in terms of expected completion percentage. And he was the worst quarterback. He was the second worst quarterback in throwing the ball into tight coverage at 20.7. So, like, don't tell me you made him look great. How many times did you see the somebody in the middle of the field? There wasn't anybody around them for 20 yards. Boom, bang it there. I mean, when you left that stadium on Sunday, if you're Goot, the GM, or if you're anybody in the front office, like, well, wait a minute, Love looked pretty good today. Made a great throw, made a lot of good throws in the game. So I don't understand it. Like, to me, you could sense he's agitated. I mean, they're 31st in yards allowed, right? They're 30th in passing yards allowed. How does he come up with that? Does somebody just say, like, they're 32nd in first downs allowed? 32nd in first downs, and you're saying you're good on defense?
Says they played good defense, and he said that they played good, like earlier in that press conference, he said that they played good defense during his time in Los Angeles, and I just, the facts are not there. The evidence is not there to suggest that they played good defense, and that's what he was brought there to do. And you mentioned all the guys like Joey Bosa once again carted off the field. I don't know if they said it's a foot injury, but it looked like it might be an Achilles. Like, we'll find that out later on today here. But I mean, even Derwin James, this is a guy who's an all-pro. We've talked about Derwin James among the blue chip players. His play has declined as well. Like, it just feels like it's a systemic issue. Coaching is not good, and the players also haven't lived up to the billing as well.
No, they haven't. I mean, they're not. I think it's a misconception. I think, you know, it's like, okay, the Jets have a great defense, okay, and everybody keeps saying that. Although when you watch the games, you know, they give up plays, right? Cleveland has a great defense. They don't give up plays, but we don't talk about that, right? We just say they're great. Once you get that label, it's the George Costanza theory. You park the car in front of you get there early, you leave your car there, you're a hard worker. It's just permeates all the way through. It's a perception, like, that when you have to throw the ball and you can't pass protect, that's a problem. When you have to run the ball and you can't run it out, that's a problem. I mean, to me, they had an opportunity to win that game, and when they have to pass protect against a good front, look, regardless of what Big Daddy says, the Packers front is good when they can rush it. They can't do it.
Yeah, I'll take Rashawn Gary on my team. I don't know. I guess Big Daddy doesn't want him on the team. I was like, he was pretty good yesterday.
I mean, Gary, how about the kid from, I can't say his name, from South Carolina? He's a bitch. You got, you know, you got the inside guy, Kenny Clark.
Yeah, Kenny Clark.
I mean, they're good.
Yeah, they got some good players up there, and they showed out and showed up well in the game. Packers win at 23-20. And for the Chargers, it doesn't get any easier, because next Sunday Night Football, here come the Baltimore Ravens to town with extra rest and that front and what they can do on offense and all the stuff that Baltimore presents from a challenge standpoint. That'll be a tough one in national TV. We'll continue the coaches on the hot seat theme when we come back here and talk about what happened yesterday in Charlotte. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See DKNG.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, before we move on to the game in Charlotte yesterday, issuing a correction on the Joey Bosa injury. Sounds like the x-rays came back negative, so not an Achilles. It looks like it might be a foot injury, but he was carted off and looked like he was pretty dejected leaving Lambeau Field here. But the Panthers, Michael, yesterday was pretty ugly. Cowboys win it 33-10. They went ahead and covered that number. Panthers now fall to 1-9. Bryce Young, I mean, he was sacked a million times in the game. There was a pick six by Deron Bland, who now has four pick sixes on the season, by the way. That's pretty remarkable. But what you saw yesterday in Charlotte has been something that's kind of been brewing all throughout this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying it since the summer. I think, you know, we talked about it. I know I went on and did a radio show in Charlotte back in August, and they're like, you know, do you have some personal vendetta against Frank Wright? And I said, no, I don't. I just, like, their team looks horrible, poorly organized. There's no attention to detail, you know. And there are certain games, I think, when you watch during the regular season where there you say, if we win this game, we're going to be a playoff team. And then there's certain games where when you lose, it's not a bad loss, it's a horrendous loss. When the Raiders lost with Brian Hoyer at quarterback in Chicago, that was a horrendous loss. You're not coming back from that, right? You've lost, you know, you start the guy at quarterback, the team loses, you leave there getting your ass kicked. I don't give a shit how you want to defend it. You know, this league is too volatile to defend it. And there's going to be changes, whether they happen in season or off the season. I mean, now, again, like anything, it's just not one thing, but it's accumulation of so many things. And that loss to the Bears for the Raiders, I mean, that was the end of them. And I think yesterday, getting embarrassed again at home, losing to the Cowboys when you had a lot of Cowboy fans in there, and never and not showing any ability to get better, to improve. The same problems that occur in August are the same problems we're talking about today. That, to me, if you're a general manager and owner, you've got to say, wait a minute, this is wrong. We're not fixing what's broken. And that's part of what you have to do as an organization. You've got to take an assessment and figure out what's broken and how to fix it. I think the perfect example, Femi, is in Denver. You know, what Sean is doing in Denver is what I call the Apollo 13 theory. What's the Apollo 13 theory? Do you remember in the movie Apollo 13 where they're all stuck up in space and those scientists are sitting in the room and they basically they have two cardboard boxes and they dump all this shit on the table and they say, we've got to take this and make it into that using nothing but this. That's the job of a head coach. That's the job of what you have to figure out what you have. And sometimes it takes you four or five games to do it, like Sean. And then you got to change what you're doing to fit what you can do. You know, we're going to run the ball. You know, all this bullshit about Russell's playing great bullshit. They're not letting Russell participate, right? They know Russell could beat them. They're not going to let Russell beat them. They're going to let Russell manage the game. They're going to run the ball. They're going to give him certain plays to make. And he's going to look a lot better than he really is. Smart as shit. Fix the defense, play a certain way. Carolina's never done that. Carolina has never done that all year. The problems have been so obvious, and they've got a really good line coach. They kept Camp and James Camp and their line coach there, and he could have gone anywhere in the league, and they paid him a lot of money to be there because of the way they played last year, and they've gotten worse. Now, why have they gotten worse, Femi? What's the common denominator? And that's what I was saying this summer.
Well, let's go into the Wayback Machine here on the GM Shuffle, because this summer in August, when we saw the preseason and we saw Bryce Young getting beat up quite a bit, I asked you, should we be pressing the panic button on the Carolina Panthers? And here was your response.
You know, look, I think this has been Frank Wright's to be his biggest issue. He's 0-4-1 in opening games. Does he get his team ready for the opener? Is his team, do they take advantage of training camp? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Nobody's playing fast yet. I mean, so you got to be worried. If I'm David Tepper, I'm asking myself, like, what did Frank do to convince me that he deserved a second chance? Right? Like, what did he do that makes me feel like I shouldn't have hired somebody? Now, they hired him because, you know, like, they let Steve Wilks walk out of the building. They didn't give him the job. Steve Wilks proved on tape that he made that team better.
And they've gotten much worse, as you outlined. Like, they almost won the division last year.
And now Tepper's got to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be embarrassed, right? He's got to sit there and say, wait a minute. My involvement has made this worse. Now, I'm not saying he was like, look, they picked the quarterback. Obviously, C.J. Stroud looks better than Bryce Young. I'm not ready to give up on Bryce Young, no matter how many times he throws pick six. I mean, remember, Peyton Manning was 1-15, and Troy Aikman was 2. But this Panther team is better than it is showing. It's underachieving and getting worse every week. I mean, think about this, Femi. They're a 4-point dog to the Tennessee Titans in Tennessee next week, and Will Levis is a disaster. He can't make a throw.
Looks bad.
I mean, they can't do anything offensively, Tennessee. I mean, they've gotten blown out in the state of Florida 2 weeks in a row. I mean, it's not been close. Right? So, like, how is this possible? It just shows you how bad you are as a team, and there's no point of a return. I mean, when you beat Houston, okay, now I get it. J.C. Horn's not healthy, Brian Byrne, all these. I got you. But everybody has injuries.
Exactly.
If you're David Tepper, you're sitting there saying, look, I made a mistake, and that loss was a bad, bad loss.
And Tepper now is under fire because everyone's going to point to, well, he fired 2 coaches with his soccer team with Charlotte FC. He already fired, moved on and fired Matt Rhule and fired Von Rivera and all these. Like, everyone's talking about how Tepper has a short leash. But also, if you're David Tepper, in defense of him, if you realize you made a bad hire, you got to fix it. you can't just continue moving forward with this.
Well, if you had progress, I mean, I think that was the issue. I think when you look back at why did Mark Davis fire Josh McDaniel, he didn't see progress. Part of what we have to do, regardless of when you enter a team and how bad a team is, you got to see progress. Dan Campbell showed progress. They weren't winning, but they were progressing. You got to be able to see that, and you got to sell progress, right? And the Raiders, they weren't progressing. They really weren't. They weren't a great team when they got there. And they raised the bar when they traded for Adams. They really did, which wasn't a good – we know this. I've said this many times. You don't build a team around a receiver. But they raised the bar of expectation because they've got the receiver. And then they couldn't even come close to meeting them. So it's the same thing. I mean, same thing. David Tepper, it's sunk cost now. It's the sunk cost. He can't go down this road. He's got to make a change. The team, you could just see the way the team played. I mean, if it wasn't Thanksgiving, I think he would make a change today. Speaking of Thanksgiving, if it wasn't Thanksgiving, how do you think Josh Harris feels today?
Let's get into that, because yesterday, Tommy DeVito and the New York Giants beat the Washington Commanders 31-19. Just think about what we were saying about the Giants this time last week, about like, wow, they look like a horrendous team. Like, they look like an FCS football program. And then here comes DeVito, 246, 3 touchdowns. Credit him. They're calling him the passing paisano. I think your boy McAfee coined him that on Twitter yesterday, and I was kind of chuckling at that. But a big win for the New York Giants and an embarrassing loss for the Washington Commanders, who now fall to 4-7, a bad performance all around there from Washington.
I would have never taken the Giants, but I kept asking, how are the Washington Commanders a 9-point favorite when they scored 7 points in the last game? I mean, this game is a perfect example for any coach to study and figure out that from one game to the next, right? The Washington Commanders were 1-for-15 on third down in the last game in the Meadowlands, right? And the way Martindale attacked the protection schemes of Eric Bieniemy were clear. And once again, they did it again. And they forced 6 turnovers. I mean, the fact that this game is even close, it's a 24-21 game when Howell throws the pick 6 to Simmons. So it's actually a closer game than it should be. And give DeVito credit, all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
The guys were wide-ass open. I mean, it was probably one of the worst coaching jobs you're ever going to see by a defensive unit. They broke coverages. You know, I mean, they sacked DeVito 9 times in the game. And they couldn't force a turnover. And the Giants played exactly kind of how you have to play in the NFL, which is mistake-free. And let them make the mistakes. See, this is the problem with – I mean, Rivera's had 3 winning seasons in 13 years as a head coach. I mean, and then he calls – I almost lost my mind. He calls timeout towards the end of the game with 2:06 to go on 3rd-and-8. Like, if you've been coaching this long in the NFL – And you call a timeout under the 7-second mark before the 2-minute warning, you're just not paying attention.
Yep.
You're just, because now what you've done is you've given the offense a chance to throw it. You do not want to do that. Andy Reid does it. He gets away with it. Right? Rivera got away with it yesterday. But it is the mark of not being aware. And when have we felt like Rivera's been aware? Going back to this summer when Bieniemy's too hard on the players. I didn't know Sam Howell was good. Like, what have we been doing? They gave this man the entire authority to run this organization. And now, and are they getting better? Of course they're not. They're getting worse. They'll probably go down on Thanksgiving and play well because they usually play well in the division. Except it's against the Giants. They're 0-4 against the Giants. Do you realize this? No, they're 0-3-1. They tied them last year. In one game.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was what swung the Giants going to the playoffs instead of the Commanders going to the playoffs last season. The Giants able to get that win in Washington. And yeah, like to me, like defensively, like we've talked about Del Rio's defense and all that stuff. Like the fact that that combo of Rivera, Del Rio is still around and like we haven't made a change, and maybe they will make a change. Like if it's embarrassing Thursday night, maybe something changes to where Josh Harris says, we can't put up with this. Let's just move forward and start the coaching search here because we'll have a little bit of an extended time after the game against the Cowboys. But it's, I mean, there's nothing to be inspired about when you watch them.
Well, let me say this to you. They got Dallas, then they got Miami at home, then they have the bye. They come back and play the Rams and the Jets, San Francisco and Dallas. So they've got 6 games left, and you know, they're going to have and I thought they had a chance to be, you know, they have a chance to get the over total. I mean,
yeah.
they've won 1 game in the last 5. They're 1-5. I mean, they're getting worse. Now, you could say, well, they traded away all their guys. No.
They were bad with them.
And you can go and give it to Bieniemy, but Bieniemy's going to get it. I mean, Howell is going to eventually Howell's one more hit away from maybe missing next season. I mean, he's getting hit way too many times. He went in the blue tent yesterday.
And I'll raise my hand. Like I was right along with you as one of the people that thought that this Commanders team could be a potential playoff team this season with the guys that they had. Like this is not a team that's devoid of talent. Like when you look at their roster,
you put
like,
Mike Vrabel as the head coach on this team. You make Mike Vrabel the head coach of this team. What do you think their record is?
Yeah, we're talking about the 7 or 6 seed Washington Commanders. We're not talking about 4-7. I can tell you that right now.
Exactly.
It's just been bad for Washington. All right, that does it for all the coaches on the hot seat. Let's talk a little bit about some good coaches there. Sean Payton, Broncos, they improved to 5-5 after beating the Vikings on Sunday Night Football. We'll get into that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Denver Broncos were 0-3 to start the season, 1-5 as well after 6 games, had 70 points scored on them by the Miami Dolphins. And now fast forward here to Thanksgiving week, and now they're sitting at 5-5, winners of 4 straight, most recently last night as they beat the Minnesota Vikings 21-20. I was captivated by the game. I thought it was really entertaining, high-stakes game, both teams in playoff contention. What were your thoughts on the Broncos' victory yesterday against Minnesota?
My thoughts have been pretty much the same about what Sean's doing in Denver. Is he's going to keep the game close. He's going to take every point he could get. How about when the fans booed him when he sent the field goal team out there and they didn't go for it, right? That won the game for him, right? Those 3 points that he got early in the game that they booed him on because he kicked the field goal won the game for him. We won't mention that, though, because Sean knows the game is going to be in the fourth quarter, and he's got to win the game in the fourth quarter. And so in this fourth quarter, he has probably the best fourth quarter he can have. He gets 2 field goals and a touchdown. He wins the game there. He gets 13 points in the fourth. He wins the game. And so, or 12 points in the fourth because they went for two and didn't get it, which killed the thing. And let's face it. I mean, and, you know, this Viking team, as good as they played defensively, and they played really good defensively. I mean, they only allowed 13 first downs in the game. I mean, the basically average game per offensive play, the Broncos were 5-7, but they didn't have the ball. They only had the ball for 25 minutes. I mean, Minnesota controlled it. I think Kevin O'Connell does a really good job of game planning specific to the defense. I think he's been a really good play caller.
Yeah.
He just can't control the fumbles. Their fumble, you know, Dobbs had three more fumbles last night. He lost one. Madison's fumble was a killer. And so, you know, I mean, Sean could care less about the stat sheet. He cares about the win sheet, which is exactly what I talk about all the time. Take the points, get the game to the fourth quarter, win it there. You know, it's ugly. You know, it's ugly as shit. You know, it's not going to make anybody think you're the second coming. You know, but we're not going to let Russell beat us. He's going to have 35 attempts for 259 yards. We're going to matriculate, got to call screens. Our leading pass receiver is going to be a running back. Okay.
Yeah, and it's what we talk about when we say calling plays to win the game versus to put up the DVOA numbers and all the stats that look good on paper. But, hey, like, you got to win. And I thought that what they did defensively, I think we do owe, like, Vance Joseph a little bit of credit. Like, their run defense is poor. And Minnesota, we talked about the Vikings not being able to run the football. They ran the football very well in this game, but they buckled down in the red zone. They got the necessary stops, and they have this ability to just continue to force turnovers. They forced three more turnovers yesterday, which was the difference in the game.
It was. I mean, you know, when you don't turn it over and the opponent turns. I mean, think about this. Washington turned it over six times and the Giants didn't turn it over, and yet it was a close game. That tells you how poorly the Washington football team played. This game was 3-0, right? Yeah. 3-0. You know, they get the free, they go three plays, they get 9 yards. He kicks the field goal to go up 3-0. Everybody wants them to get the touchdown. He don't care. He kicks 3 points. Those 3 points end up coming back and win the game for him. So it's like, you know, why do we have to start off with it? Just keep playing the game. Be the tortoise. Don't be the hare. Just get the game to the fourth quarter and then win the game in the fourth quarter. You know, win the game in the fourth quarter and go from there. So I think it's a credit to Vance. They're playing great situational football. They're getting the ball out. And, you know, they're finding ways to win. This week they have Cleveland coming in, which will be a struggle. They will struggle to run the ball on Cleveland. Yeah. So all their short passing games going to come back into play, and their defense will play good against Cleveland's offense.
I am a little bit concerned, though, if Cleveland just runs the ball on them, then maybe Cleveland can find some success. But I'm falling in like with the Denver Broncos. Not love, because they have some clear deficiencies, but falling in like with this team. Like, it's a fun turnaround that they've had out there, and seeing, you know, like the little bit of a resurgence with the Denver Broncos. So we'll see what happens. But it's been interesting to see them go ahead and win some of these games.
I mean, he's being a head coach. This is what I complain about all the time. He's being a head coach. He's taking what he has. He knows his team now. He knows he can't get into a track meet. He knows if he tries to do what he did earlier in the season, you know, he may outscore people, but he also is vulnerable to winning a game, right? And so, you know, when you go back and look at their season, you know, before the Miami 70-point affair, I mean, he's got a chance to beat the Raiders, can't win that game. The Commanders, he gets a lead on them and loses that game. He lost two home games early in the season, but he got it back again. But he's playing the game to win the game, and he's game planning to win the game. And he's not trying to be, okay, he knows he doesn't have Drew Brees. He can't, and he plays to the strength of his team.
Kudos to the Broncos, now sitting at 5-5. In that AFC wildcard race. How about the NFC West showdown between the Seahawks and the Rams? And I was watching this one after our show that we did from noon to four here at VSiN. And I was just looking at this, like, the game management at the end of this thing was just a disaster class.
Oh my
but
God.
The Rams end up pulling it out 17-16, missed field goal at the end of it as time expired there from Jason Myers, 55 yards. I'm sure you were also pulling your hair out, throwing the remote, watching the final couple minutes of this one.
Well, I did not think the Rams, this game mirrored the first game they played, right? The first game they played, it was 13-7 at the half. This game's 13-7 at the half in favor of Seattle. And then the second half, the Rams took over the game up in Seattle. Seattle had one first down and only had the ball for 5 minutes. This game, was similar. They had two first downs in the third quarter. They got a field goal. They had four punts in the second half, and they threw an interception. And with all that being said, the Rams have a chance. The Rams give them an opportunity to come back down the field because, on for whatever reason, you know, Sean gets into empty on second down. They've got one more timeout left. He gets into empty and tries to run an inside slant, and it's not going to score. It's not even going to score, right? I mean, so think about this. Again, let's go back to what we talk about all the time. What's the margin of safety, right? If I throw this pass and it's not in the end zone or it's not a touchdown, you know, and it's incomplete, that's not good. And that's what happened. So now they don't burn the timeouts. They're now on third down, he's got to run it. But Pete uses his timeout, right? Pete uses his timeout, and now he's got the ball back. And here's the thing that was driving me nuts, is you know that the field goal kicker the field goal kicker for the Seattle is really good. I mean, Myers he's got a strong leg. It's in a dome. He's made a 54-yarder before. He's made a 52-yarder before, and he's made a 49-yarder before. So when you're in the headsets talking, do we go for it? Do we try to win the game here, score a touchdown, or do we take the timeout away? You got to say to yourself, look, this guy can make it inside of 55 yards. He's proven it to us. And yet they don't. They run it. And then they come back, and then this is, to me, one of my biggest pet peeves. Now, I don't know if you noticed this on the sideline. Pete was talking to a guy with a notebook. That must be his analytical guy, his situational guy. And they were talking over things. When they make the big throw to Metcalf in the fourth quarter, like there's – I'm going to look it so I have the right time on it here.
It felt like there was about 30-plus seconds left or so in the game. Like there was still time to – I was surprised they didn't clock it to try to get another chunk play.
Well, yeah. I mean, so they had a chance at they make the big throw, right? They make the big throw and they get it down to the Seattle 40, mm-hmm. or the Seattle 38, and it's second and eight at the Seattle 48, and they just put it up the like they're going to concede that, like. The objective is not to get into field goal range. The objective is to get into makeable field goal range. Like, they had enough time to throw the ball. They had plenty of time. If they could have gotten 10 more yards, that kid's going to make that kick.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just backed out of it. It's a little bit like the Chicago, and we'll get to Chicago-Detroit later, but, I mean, Chicago's got this big lead, and all they got to do is milk clock, and Fields has been the main runner. And all of a sudden, they revert to a personality that doesn't exist, and they're trying to run their runners. Like, at this point, you got to get into makeable field goal range. You just can't get into field goal range, and it costs them the game. I mean, they're fortunate. Sean was fortunate because he would have been getting killed today for it. I thought one of the other things I thought watching this whole game, I thought Stafford. I mean, if he has much more in his tank, it ain't a lot. I could tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, he gets beat up back there. And they lost Cooper Kupp. Looks like he has an ankle injury. He didn't come back in the game there. But
yeah.
Puka Nacua, he stepped in pretty well and picked up kind of where he left off prior to Kupp's return here. But, yeah, I think Seattle, like they went ahead and ran the ball, gave it to Charbonnet to just set up for that 55-yard field goal. It's like you had at least one more play to get some more yardage there to make it more manageable of a kick. But the kick gets pushed right, and the Seahawks lose the game. And that's a big loss for Seattle, too, when you look at their schedule, Michael, because it's now San Francisco coming up on Thanksgiving, to where we don't even know if Geno Smith's going to play. He still has like the tricep injury behind his throwing arm. It's going to be tough for him to in a quick turnaround.
Yeah, he went back in there. I mean, he toughened it up. I mean, Locke came in and threw the interception, which was like a punt. You know, and look, sometimes this Seattle offense, you just look like when you're watching them in the first half, I wrote in my notes, I'm like, you know, because I took the Rams and Russo, you know, and I got killed by the Raider game, which we didn't talk about yet. But I mean, you look at that game and how Miami didn't score more than 20 points. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I took a shot at Carolina figuring this would be their last stand. You know, I thought Carolina would play, and with Dallas thinking about the Thanksgiving day, I thought they would make it a closer game, you know, playing at home, and Dallas hadn't been good on the road. But I'm fortunate to come out of this bad week with a 1-2, and thank God Russo lost both his games already. So we're cheering for the Chiefs tonight.
There you go. Chiefs land the 2.5 there. Real quick, we'll obviously continue this on the other side. Buffalo and the Jets. The Bills, they win the game 32-6. Jets, it was as bad as the box score suggests. Zach Wilson, 7-15, 81 yards.
It was worse.
It was it probably was worse.
It was worse.
And he was actually benched in the game.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't understand how we keep saying this Jet defense is so great and all they talk about. I mean, I think Tony Romo's great. But last night when he said, I thought Big Daddy and I were going to lose it, when he said both of these coaches are elite and that the Jets offense isn't as bad as you know, the Jets offense is getting ready to turn the corner.
What?
Look, I know he wants to be nice to everybody, but, like, come on, Tony. You know this is the worst offense you've ever seen in football. Like, you know this. You know Zach Wilson, I mean – Zach Wilson, I'm going to tell you this, he's a lack of volume player, and I'll explain it on the other side.
0-for-11 on third down are the New York Jets, but maybe they're turning the corner, as Tony Romo said. I'm glad I didn't have the volume on that broadcast. I could have been losing my mind right along with you there. We'll get into that game more in depth on the other side. We'll also hand out some hardware, and then we'll give a little preview of tonight's game of the year, Eagles-Chiefs Monday Night Football, as we wrap up the pod next. Michael, as we're heading to break, you mentioned that you wanted to kind of talk about Zach Wilson in terms of his overall evaluation. What did you want to highlight here?
I think the longer the season goes for Zach Wilson, the less interested he becomes. The less he does not have competitive stamina. And I think if you watch the kid's mannerisms and you watch how he plays, the volume of games, like, he's the perfect example of what they teach you at the Navy SEALs. They'll tell you this at Coronado. When the SEALs come in and they've been recruited, they've been vetted, everybody, the best athlete, the fastest runner, the highest jumper, all those people, men or women, that start really fast, that clearly are above everybody else athletically, are the first to go because they can't handle the volume of it every day. They can't do it all the time. They have great talent. They don't have that competitive stamina gene. You know, and if you listen to Brady talking to C.J. Stroud on his pod, talks about, you know, this is your job. People that come visit you think they're on vacation. You got to keep them out of it. This is your job. For Zach Wilson, he's not yet transferred from this is I play football to this is my job. And he can't keep it going all the time. He can have a good play here, a good play there. But when the game comes third down and the game speeds up, he doesn't have enough competitive stamina to prepare, to study, to do the things he has to do. And it's clear. And I know Saleh, you know, finally benched him for Boyle. I mean, you know, like, seriously, where are we going with this one? But he had to do something because the team, you know, you could say the Jets are great on defense and the reason they fall in the tank is because of the team. I get some of that, but look at the Brownies. I mean, the Brownies, you know, the Brownies play great defense and they find a way to run the football, and the Jets don't even find a way to run the ball. I mean, they can't even make anything go in the run game, Femi. It's comical.
Yeah.
I mean, what they had 18 carries for 63 yards. Breece Hall had 10 carries for 23. I mean, Wilson was 7 for 15 for 81 yards. He got sacked 5 times. His longest pass of the day was 18 yards. Like, I mean, And why would Aaron Rodgers even come back for this? Like, what is he thinking? You're getting behind that line? You're getting in that offense? I mean, unless you got a red cape, there's no chance.
Yeah, getting behind that offensive line there with a tender Achilles. Like, that's it. To me, that seems like a bad idea, to be honest there. But he says he wants to come back. We'll see what happens next month there. But, yeah, the Jets, it's just, I mean, maybe it's Tim Boyle on Black Friday when they take on the Dolphins. Maybe it's Zach Wilson.
Oh, my.
I don't think it matters. It's just, it's going to be a disaster anyways for that offense. The defense is going to have some sort of remarkable performance.
I don't think he can go back to Zach Wilson. I don't think he can go back. I think the team's deflated. It's a little bit like New England's problem. They can't go back to Mac Jones. Like, they can't. I mean, I'm not saying Bailey Zappi's any good, but they can't go back to Mac Jones.
Just got
to
change.
They've had this. Sometimes it's like you just got to change. Like, you just, like, the team doesn't believe in him. If the team doesn't, and I think a lot of this permeates from the fact that he doesn't have competitive stamina. Like, he can go work out and he can dazzle you with a throw here or a throw there, or, oh my God, this looks really good. But there's no consistency in anything he does because his work ethic and his commitment to his craft to be the best that he wants to be. You know, it's like, you know, they were asked, they had Stevie Van Zandt on 60 Minutes last night, and he was talking about, him and Springsteen were sitting there talking about their childhood. And, you know, and Stevie says, well, this is, you know, this is all we could do. And Springsteen's like, yeah, but we made sure that this is all we did. Like, they were so vested in their careers that they were going to do it 24/7. This kid's not vested in his career. He's got other things he likes. Like, he doesn't love football. You could see it. I could see it a mile away. And he, the talent is such a tease. Oh, I'm going to tease you.
It's unfortunate for the Jets as the season continues to kind of fall off the rails. Real quick, let's hit the game in the Motor City. They're the Detroit Lions. Big fourth quarter, a comeback win there as they avoid an upset loss. 8-2 there now. Their record after they beat the Bears 31-26.
I thought for 52 minutes, Fields played as good as he could play. He ran the ball around. He was moving it. I thought when he was on the move, he was able to make good throws, accurate throws down the field. Look, he holds the ball too long. You have to run plays for him. I thought, you know, we got what there was 4:41 to go in the game, you know, and they've got a chance that they got a 3rd-and-1 they can't convert. And they do it. They don't put the ball in Fields' hands. If they convert that, they settle for the field goal. They convert that, they're going to run more time off the clock. But they run the fullback belly. They get stuffed up front. They kick the field goal. Now they're up 23-14, and they act like they've got this elite defense. Again, here's a perfect example. Is if you're so good on defense, when they have to throw it, you've got to be able to stop them from throwing it. But, you know, and Ndakwe and Sweat had a sack in the game. He was unblocked. No pressure on Goff, who played as bad as he could play. This is as bad as Goff's going to play, and you still couldn't beat him. Come back down the field. Now you get the ball. You have the ball in the fourth quarter, right? You have the ball in the fourth quarter, and you know they just had scored on you, right? So you got three timeouts. You're going to make them use all their timeouts. You get the ball in the fourth quarter, and you got to make them use all their timeouts, right? And so what happens? You know, you run three fullback bellies into the line. Right? You run three fullback, you know, 1st and 10, 2:09 to go in the game, 2:59 to go in the game. They run Herbert up the middle, no gain. 2nd and 10, they run Herbert off left tackle, 1 yard. 3rd and 9, Field throws an incomplete pass. So they save them the timeout. So now they make the score 26-21 with 3 minutes to go in the game, and then they're giving the ball back to the Lions with 2:33 to go in the game. You can't just run belly into the line. Like, at that point of the game, if you're a really good head coach, you say to your offensive coordinator, look, what is our best two or three 2-point plays, right? I know they only get supposed to get 3 yards or whatever, 2.5, but we got to run our three best plays, because if we can get a first down, or we can get 8 yards, or we get some, but it has to involve Fields. And of course, they don't give Fields touch the ball. And look, you know I'm no Fields lover. I know that. But at least you got to let his legs win the game for you.
Keep the legs as a factor there. They weren't able to do that. They give up the big lead there, double digits in the fourth quarter. The Lions now 8-2, and they have a nice schedule.
And then, you know,
what's
funny? You know what's funny about this game is if you took the Bears.
Yep.
Right. If you took the Bears and laid the 7 and got the 7.5 or the 8, you think, okay, I had that handicap well. I'm not so sure, because when Fields got sacked and the ball was laying on the ground.
Yep. We were talking about it on the show yesterday. Like Bears backers, right? Yeah, had to be feel like you were just sitting there being like, oh my God, we're about to lose. And luckily it got kicked out of the back of the end zone for the safety for people who bet the Bears. But yeah, for about 10 seconds there, it was just like, oh my God, this is how I lose.
And he holds the ball forever. He holds the ball forever. I mean, you know, and that was as healthy as the Bears were all year. I mean, they moved the ball. They actually looked good for up until they can't close the game out. And people say, well, they got tired on defense. And, you know, I mean, like, I'm not sure I buy that. Like, the Bears had the ball for 40 minutes in the game. The Bears offense had the ball for 40 minutes in the game. And I hear people at the end of the saying, well, they got tired on defense. How? They only had the ball. They were only on the field for 1936.
Yeah, no, that's bonus.
And the Lions still had 338 yards against them, and they turned it over three times.
Four times. It was four turnovers for the Detroit Lions.
Four times.
And they won the game. Let's go rapid fire with the awards here. Fred Palermo, how about this? We're giving it to our friends over at Big Blue.
Well, I mean, look, you got to give them credit, right? DeVito throws two touchdown passes, and, you know, and he's in there, and he does that. And, you know what I mean? Look, they don't turn the ball over. They said to themselves, Ron Rivera, you're the favorite. You're not a very good favorite. We just won't do anything. We'll take sacks and punt.
Yeah.
They got sacked nine times. But we'll punt it if we have to. If we don't turn it over, we got a chance. They made a horrendous decision early in the game on fourth and four to go for it in field goal range. Like, I don't know what they think. And, of course, he got sacked on that play. But they managed the game correctly. And at some point, if you're Rivera, you got to say to Bieniemy, Eric, do you understand that they're attacking our protections? We got to change them?
You would think. Fraud of the week.
Oh, I mean, this notion that to me, the two big frauds in this league is the Chargers are this incredibly talented team, which I think is really not true. It was proven yesterday by Green Bay, who put 400 yards on them. And when they had to throw the ball, the Chargers, they couldn't throw it. Now, I know they missed Mike Williams. You know, I know they missed, but their receiving core isn't good enough. Their offensive line depth isn't good enough, and the secondary is atrocious. I mean, even, you know, we can say Derwin James is an elite player. You don't feel him on the field.
No, he's no longer that guy. On the lamb, we're going with Robert Saleh here, going on the lamb here before Black Friday.
I mean, how do you defend your guy? How do you say he's playing well and then pull? I mean, seriously.
Like, really
at some point, believability matters. Say nothing. I mean, to me, if you were going to teach a class in how not to be a leader, Saleh's going to show you what to do, what to say, what you shouldn't say. I plead the fifth. He's playing well. You know, I mean, come on.
At some
point, he needs a coach.
If you don't know, now you know.
I mean, luckily, the Rams own Seattle. I still don't think the Rams can – I mean, after that game, the way Stafford looked at the end of that game, God bless him, he's tough, isn't he?
Yeah,
jeez, oh man, is he tough.
He is a tough SOB.
I mean, he's a warrior. He is truly a warrior. I mean, the Seattle just – for some reason, the second half runs – they run out of gas against the Rams. They just can't play it.
Well, now they have the Niners coming to town Thanksgiving night. It is what it is.
Well, I mean, look, if the Jets defense is so good, Femi, then how come they're not playing like Cleveland?
It's a good question. Cleveland, once again, they get a big victory with Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Good for him. He was emotional after the game. It was nice to see that. They're 7-3 now, their record. Also, quick programming note before we wrap this up. We will be taping the pod on Wednesday. So for all you guys traveling for Thanksgiving, safe travels. We'll be taping the pod on Wednesday to preview the Thanksgiving games and also the Week 12 slate here. So remember that Wednesday morning, the pod will be in your feed. Final thoughts here, Michael. Monday Night Football, Chiefs-Eagles. What do you think happens?
Well, I think if the Chiefs' offense is going to turn around, it's got to happen tonight. They got to protect, and if they protect, they'll throw the ball effectively on Philadelphia. And, you know, I think that's going to be the key to the game. They've got to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs win by four. That's what I think happens. At least that's what I'm hoping happens, because I have Eagles teasers. So that's what we need. We need that to go ahead.
It's all about you, Femi. It's all about you.
You know, got to get some money in the pocket here. But that does it for this edition of the podcast. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Subscribe, rate, and review, as always. Thank you to you, Michael. I will talk to you Wednesday morning as we will tape the podcast to get ready for Thanksgiving this week. We'll see you then.